In the beginning, there was nothing. Then there were comic books. Once you enter our world, there is no escape. Comic exposure begins in 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to the Comic Exposure Podcast. My name is Josh. And with me is my own Crypt Keeper, my own, maleficent little curator of curiosities. The one, the only.
Here lies Josh Buckley, husband, father, and podcaster. Travis Ratz here.
I like it, Travis. I like it. And on the show,
I feel like you were pushing me to do it.
Travis. I was. And impression. I'm.
Yeah.
It wasn't great, but it's okay. I've heard better.
I know. We don't talk about these beforehand. So I gotta kind of.
You gotta. Also, look, we are off air. Rough day. Rough go of it. Rough month.
Rough day.
For Travis.
Rough month.
For Travis Ratz. But with us on the podcast today is our seminal spooky guest. Andrea, welcome to the show.
Hey, I'm not doing any impressions, but thank you.
You don't have a wicked Crypt Keeper that you can put on us?
I'm more of an Elvira girl, but this is not a visual medium. So,
but Elvira doesn't have a voice. She's just like kind of
like, hey,
East Coast.
Hey.
That's about as much. Maybe kind of New York, but not really.
I'm just boots.
Can you do any impressions of any of the members of the Insane Clown Posse?
Can just give us a whoop whoop. There we go. Okay.
That's all right. Also, Josh, how many Crypt Keeper impressions have you heard since you're so critical of Travis's?
Everybody has one. Everybody has one. Everyone has the one they break out in the spooky season. So this is the final episode of our October spooky season. We've done two books. This is the third book. And I think we had some fun with the kind of anthology we did from Mike Mignola, and we were trying to figure out how do we wrap this up. And it just felt, we talked about how like, ooh, it was nice to kind of just like read little spooky things. And we had a conversation about, you know, I do believe that we had a Tales from the Crypt conversation as we talked about this sort of idea of the anthology. So we are reading, not Tales from the Crypt because that is available, but we read Epitaphs from the Abyss, correct, Mundo? Is that the name of this thing?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Epitaphs from the Abyss, out on EC Comics. EC is back, guys, making them creepy books. So an entertaining comic company. So Terror,
yeah, I know. Epitaphs the from name the Abyss. It's so funny. What does it stand for? Entertaining comic. Not entertaining comics. Just we got one.
Yeah,
we got one entertaining comic.
It's actually out on, it's an imprint from Oni Press. So Oni Press puts this out. Epitaphs from the Abyss. And this is volume one. The return. There's been a return of these sort of like anthology comics. There's a sci-fi one. There's a handful of the creepy ones. I think there's even a Western or crime one that have been out. But this series, this volume that we read has, here are just some heavy hitters on this. We've got Jason Aaron, Charlie Adler, Brian Azzarello, Karina Bechko, Lee Bermejo, Jonathan Case, Chris Condon, Tyler Cook, Jorge Fornes, Phil Hester, Jay Hoffman, Klaus Janson. And this bad
Janssen.
Boy. Matt Kent, Peter Krause, David Leffem, Vlad Legostev, Leo Max, Stephanie Phillips, Claire Rowe, Amy Rowe, Amy Roy, Jay Stevens, and Dustin Weaver all have a hand in this book. We are going to talk, this is essentially four issues, three stories an issue. That's a lot of ground for us to cover. Before we get into this book, I want to ask you guys, before we kind of dive in, I want to ask you guys, it's the final week of October. So last week of October, you've had 3 weeks to get your spooky on. Have you accomplished your spooky goals? And what have you left to spook this week? That's my question for you. Andrea, we're going to start with you as the guest. How have you been spookifying? You talk to us about, you watch scary movies, you do the house, all that. How are we now that we're deep into October?
Deep into October, but also tail end. So it is a little bittersweet for me, I got to tell you. But went to Halloween Horror Nights in Hollywood, and it was
best part of Hollywood Horror Nights. What was the best thing you did while you were there?
I was there was two houses that kind of blew my mind. Jason Universe, which it was not, there's a licensing issue. So it's not just like regular Friday 13th. It's just like Jason Kills and it's Camp Crystal Lake. That was brilliant. The kills were so genius. Lots of people staked with like s'mores sticks and stuff and on fire. And
just
then,
a bunch of hot dogs shoved in someone's mouth.
Yeah, right? It was so cool. Just, and that's the thing, like Horror Nights is not like, the houses aren't like, ooh, scary. It's just, they're so epic.
What is and it? Can you also, explain what Horror Nights is? I mean, Horror Nights,
Yeah, for sure. So it's at Universal Studios Hollywood and in Orlando, but I don't go to Florida ever. But it's basically during the evening, during like September, October, they have all these haunted houses that they have built that are based off different properties, or they create original ones. And they just have like, it's a movie studio. So the effects and the vastness of how far they go with these are really, really incredible. And they get licensing from all the biggest horror movies you've ever seen. And plus like sci-fi stuff. They did like Alien, and they had like the original molds from the queen, and like made full size aliens in the house and stuff. And they do scent cannons. So if it's like you're in a gross bathroom, it smells like what a gross bathroom sounds like.
That's too much for me. I'm out. I tap out. The smell's too much.
The first year I went, it was when Walking Dead first started. And so it was like the house that the family died in. So it was all sealed in essentially. And so that was one of the first things you walked into. I thought I was going to barf. I'm like, I don't know if this is for me, but we went through and it was fantastic. But like, it's so fun. But Jason Universe was great. And then they had a Fallout house, which I've actually never watched Fallout.
It's a good one.
I'm so ready now because the house was incredible. Yeah. I'm like, I don't know what the hell's going on, but this is like, but that was great. We went to do the LA Haunted Hayride, which is like legend in Griffith Park. Like,
Can I pause there? So you're saying how, like, do you remember how many different haunted houses there were?
There's eight. Seven houses. And then they do, because they have the studio tour, the tram. They call it the Terror Tram, and they take you to the back lot and you walk by the Psycho House and the Bates Motel and the big War of the Worlds crash site set. This year was Blumhouse themed, so it was all Blumhouse movies.
That's so cool. They're actually theming it after Blumhouse.
Yeah. So they do like Megan, Black Phone, and Exorcist Believer, and The Purge, and
Cooties.
Yeah, all those. Yeah, so it's so much fun, and I'm such a movie nerd and a horror nerd, and I love going to LA. So it's like a perfect thing. And my girl Jess, this was our 15th year going, so it's just a big trip.
I've never been to Universal Studios. I'm a huge. It's just something I've never done.
I like Horror Nights actually better than like the park itself. The park leaves a little bit to be desired, but I still love going like every now and again just to.
What did the alien smell like? Sterilization? Like sterile?
Yeah. Acid?
No, that was more like just
did
like
it smell the, like Sigourney like, Weaver.
It's oh god, I would if only bottle that up. No, but it was just like a lot of like dead body smells and stuff like that. And then like sulfuric type stuff with steam and things like that. But they had like Terrifier this year and Five Nights at Freddy's, which was amazing. They did it in a sound stage and it had like animatronics from the Jim Henson Workshop and puppets from them and stuff. And they built like a full pizza plate. It was crazy. So did that Haunted Hayride. We watched The Craft in the cemetery. Janelle Monáe was the DJ. We dressed up. We took pictures like witches. It was just super spooky. That's but now so I'm cool. I'm going to a pumpkin patch tonight. And then
it's kind of all downhill from there, honestly.
Yeah, like we get our pumpkins. We watch the witches and we carve pumpkins like the day before Halloween. And then we just give out candy and like try to spook kids and watch Halloween and eat pizza. And then I just decorate the house for Christmas.
There you go. All right. You.
Sorry.
No, I believe.
No, because that's like.
I believe you won. Nothing. You won Halloween. You won the Halloween.
That's literally my only goal in life. So.
Between the three of us. Travis, it's Germany. It's not like is Halloween a big thing in Germany? Did you get some spooky movies and spooky reading done?
I did. In fact, after last podcast, Andrea and I talked off pod, and she, I followed up on that trick or treat anthology connected with reading today, and I watched that, and I really liked it. I probably watched a couple of horror movies a week. That kind of got interrupted when I started trying to rewatch Deadwood. I guess it's Deadwood. That's spooky. Dead. I mean, the wood's dead.
Deadwood. Yeah, the wood is dead.
But that trick or treat was really fun. Last night, while grading papers, I like binged the Fear Street Netflix series.
Nice. That was okay. It was good, for a little series. Like, I wouldn't, like, it's something I watch every year, but, like,
it's really good. Like binging like five episodes of a show, really. Yeah. And it feels connected on there. Mm-hmm. And then I bailed out of a Halloween party my sister invited me to last night. It was like an hour away.
Oh, what would you have done?
I pulled some old costumes out. Rabbit De Niro. Me in a rabbit suit with a taxi driver outfit and a mole.
I thought you would go Scarface, but Taxi Driver it's more visual than the Scarface.
Yeah, that's punnier. Rabbit De Niro. This guy got a big rabbit costume on. Or then I had the Hunter S. Thompson one I went as many years ago. I still have that. So it's going to be Hunter S. Thompson or Rabbit De Niro.
Nice.
Josh, what about you, buddy?
I'm not a horror movie guy, but I read, and so I read a couple books. I'm reading one right now, but let's see. I read Blood Sugar. I said I was reading that the last time we were on. That was my first book of Halloween. A little kind of like not really a crime story. That one was okay. I didn't love it. I read a short one called Mapping the Interior, which is it's about this kid who thinks his dad is showing up at his house. His dad died. So it's a Native American boy who, after his dad is drowned, him and his mom and his brother kind of move away from the reservation. And he thinks he's seeing his dad and his ghost, in his dance regalia show up at his house. He keeps seeing him. And his ghost dad saves him from being attacked by the neighbor's dogs, maybe, but then the dogs are like mutilated by him. So it's weird. You don't really know. Did his dad ever show up? Is it all in his head? Did he kill those dogs?
You like that one? It was 100 pages.
So it was if nothing else, like it was like easy. A super easy read. So I don't mind if a small book isn't, I don't mind if a short book isn't great because it was short. Right.
Yeah.
I'm currently reading. Let's see if I can pull it up really quick. It's like Slumber Party Massacre, I think is what it's called.
That's a movie.
No, it's a Sleepover Mummy Massacre.
Yeah.
Sleepover Mummy Massacre.
All those things.
There we go. The Sleepover Mummy Massacre.
How fun. That does look like a.
Yeah, it looks like an old 80s. I mean, Amazon, they're like, there are genres of books, guys, that I don't know if you like, it's someone that's like a thing. We're like, oh, yeah, AI. It could vary. I don't think it's AI. I did read one where that felt a little AI before, but this was it feels very 80s slasher. It's like about a couple like middle school boys who are. It happens in 1990. It's a group of middle school boys who are all saying they're sleeping at someone else's house. One of their parents is out of town. So they want to go there. And two of the boys, one of the boys' older sister is having her friends over. And so the rest of them are hoping to catch, some TNA spotting some TNA. The older sister has her friends over. And apparently there's a mummy and massacring. I haven't got to that yet. It's happening on Halloween. They're all saying they're trick-or-treating. It feels very like 90s, late 80s, like schlocky horror right now.
Nice.
Right? Like the way the kids talk to each other feels very Lost Boys or...
Stand By Me.
And then what's the... Wolfman's Got Nards, Monster Squad. Like they all talk to each other.
I want to do very quickly. Or The Troop by Nick Cutter. I'm reading this right now. I'm halfway through it. That one's pretty good. It's like Lord of the Flies, but everything gone awry. And then Andrea, have you heard of Grady Dixon?
Yeah.
I just did the Final Girl support group and I read My Best Friend's Exorcist. I have his next one. It's the the hell is it? I've got it right here.
I read the Exorcist, and I read the How to Sell a Haunted House.
This is
I haven't read that one.
Did you read
that? I haven't read that one. It's called We Sold Our Souls for everyone.
We Sold Our Souls. It's podcast. Like she's she's like a she's in like a punk band, or she's like a groupie or a roadie or something, and some weird.
Yeah. See the pic on the cover. Yeah.
Yeah,
it feels like this guy's just like.
I love him.
Just picks into our souls and is like, "Are you a millennial?"
He did Horror Story. I think didn't he do Horror Story
37 and 47?
I'm still trying to finish Horror Story, but he writes women. Good. I like Horror Story. He writes women so well. That's why I like him. Like, and they're all very messed up. Like, have a history, trying to get their shit together. Like, but also still like helping people and like. Greater good stuff. I don't know. He writes women really well, which is like.
Listen to some podcast interviews with him. He talks about that quite a bit.
Yeah.
Like, you know, people bring that up a lot. And the idea of, well, not the idea, but the fact that he's a male and he can write women really well is.
Really, really well. Which I was like, is this guy an actual woman? And I'm like being fooled. But yeah, no. Like, and Stephen King like said he really liked this. Like Final Girl Support Group or whatever, one of the other ones. And I was like, oh, well, then I'm going to read him because Stephen King's my favorite. And I've loved everything I've read from this guy. So very cool.
All right Josh, also, I know you're getting antsy.
Lots of spooky stuff.
For Halloween, we went to a Halloween party. I was Buffy, 90s Buffy from the movie.
I saw it. It was
good. Did you see it? And then Ryan was, I never knew.
But it was from the movie. It was from the movie. Oh.
Yeah, it was from the movie, not the TV show, because I haven't watched the TV show.
I've never seen the TV show. Never seen it.
Everybody says it's amazing.
That's Broden tribute.
Okay.
Yeah, that's Broden.
Nerf Herder song.
All right. So.
Okay. Sorry.
Look, that was good. We got into all of our spooky stuff.
We're just trying to extend out the spooky season a little bit. People.
Yeah. No, this is good. This is look. We are talking about an anthology, and I wonder if we're going to have some crossover. So, what I've asked the homework for this episode, which is rare for this show, we read this, and I said, hey. Everybody pick two or three of the short stories that they want to talk about, that they want to mention. That way we don't have to talk about everything in this book. But generally, this book, Epitaphs from the Abyss, is a throwback to those old comics, the anthology, Let's Teach You a Lesson, Tales from the Crypt, sort of like a moral, if you will, teaching you morals. Through these spooky horror fables. Stories. Yeah, kooky, spooky fables. So
spooky fables.
Let's talk a little bit about this genre, this idea. Are the two of you, were the two of you Tales from the Crypt people? Was that
100%.
Travis, did you watch the old Tales from the Crypt, the TV show?
Yeah, that was Fox, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, it was HBO. And then they brought it to Fox, which as a child who never had cable in her house until The Sopranos came out, and then my dad dug up the street to get it. They brought it to Fox, and I was like, my life changed. It was amazing.
Yeah, they didn't bring it overseas to the military bases, but in the summer times when I watched reruns, it would be after Married with Children.
Yes,
and so that was like my favorite show, and it would be like Married with Children, and then you'd have it was all those shows that your parents were like.
Don't watch them.
If you're watching, it, keep the volume down.
Yeah.
Don't let your parents know. So this idea has been around for a long time, right? Like Tales from the Crypt took what was a very comic book storytelling thing, right? You think about it like we're sitting around the fire, everybody tell their scary story. This is an outcropping of that, right? Like the literary version of that. So we have all of these different short stories that are kind of focused on this. They all kind of like Twilight Zone-y, let's hone in on something in modern culture or in civilization that we want to poke at, that we want to tell you is wrong or bad and give you a different way to look at it. This is through the lens of horror, not through the lens of sci-fi or the lens, whatever. This is a very horror genre thing. And we are taken through this by the Grave Digger. This love creepy it. Character. All of those scenes are drawn by Charlie Adler, the guy who is famous for doing The Walking Dead, right? So That's all.
Okay, that tracks.
Walking Dead. That's okay. The artist. Charlie Adler did all these. So let's talk a little bit about the stories. Let's start with one. Andrew, what's the first one that you like? I really like this one. This is the one you want to talk about. It doesn't have to be in order. It could be whatever one.
No, The Perfect Pearl.
Okay. That's, I think the last, second to last story.
Second to last one, yeah.
Second to last story. The Perfect Pearl, writer Amy Roy, artist Claire Rowe, colorist Brittany Peer. That's in issue 4. So tell us a little bit about that story and why it grabbed you.
So there's this, I'm trying to remember what their names are and I don't have glasses on. There is this couple and they kind of meet, they have like a meet cute and they fall in love and they get married. But she has this this necklace, this pearl necklace that was given to her by her mother, and it breaks when they're upon their initial meeting. And the man is like, "Hey, let me repair this for you. I do friendship bracelets and stuff like that." She's like, "That's so sweet." So he fixes it. And as their relationship progresses in their marriage, she starts to realize like, wait, this, like, and they're very happy and she's very doting on him, but she does have a job and she does her own thing and she's still independent. And the necklace it starts to get longer. And she's very confused by it. He's like, "Oh, what are you talking about?" And he's gaslighting her this entire story because this is all very intentional. And then he starts making kind of these suggestions to her, putting this like kind of little earwig in her ear, saying like, you know, she's complaining about her work or something. And he's like, "You should just quit your job." And she's like, "I can't just quit." And he's like, "I think you should." And then she does. So she's like, you know, at home, you know, doting on him and stuff. And, you know, she says, "Oh, you know, like, I like this green dress." He's like, "Well, red looks better on you." She's like, "Okay, I'll get a red suit tomorrow." And she starts noticing this, this necklace starts changing lengths. And then she ends up pissing him off because she makes his eggs wrong one day and he loses it. And then it starts to choke her. Essentially, it gets shorter. So basically what you find out is every time she does something sweet and doting, it gets longer and longer and longer. And when she does something that pisses him off, it gets shorter and literally starts to choke her. But the whole time he's like, "You're crazy." So, you know, cause you know, men. And, and like, should we do our spoiler alerts here?
Yeah, no. Yeah. It's everybody's a spoiler. This is the show, right?
Yeah. Right. So spoiler alert. She eventually, the length gets so incredibly long and all she does is do everything to please him. And it's wrapped around her neck multiple times, just draping to the
gorgeous.
Floor. And it looks gorgeous. And everybody's like, "Look at you with your fabulous necklace." And then eventually she does hang herself with the necklace.
From the chandelier. Ooh.
From the chandelier.
After she makes him the perfect breakfast that he likes, right?
Yes, like, exactly. Yeah. And so, and it ends with, her name's Polly. And while Polly didn't live, she is now happily ever after. And it is her hanging from the chandelier. And the thing that drew me to this one, because I mean, there's great stories in this. Some have are a little more fleshed out than other ones, but this one, it was the, and maybe I didn't look at the authors or the colorist or whatever. But now that I know it's like all women on behind this thing, that like, that kind of tracks. But the aesthetic of it, just the art, seemed a little more Twilight Zone-y to me, a little, and it wasn't as modern as the other ones. It was kind of never of like where this was taking place. And it just was a very simple story. It kind of harkened back to like the scary story, like where she has the ribbon around her neck and mm-hmm. It's very mysterious. And they take the ribbon off, her head rolls off the floor or something like that. So, but it had like a very Twilight
Zone. Like a yellow wallpaper or something. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
Yeah, and, this is the most Twilighty Zone one, it felt like.
It is.
Right? Like out of all of them.
I love Twilight Zone so much. And so I think that's why this one kind of stuck with me the most. But also just the art and the aesthetic of the characters and just that kind of vibe to it. But and like it, the perfect pearl, like, and she had to be perfect for him and all this stuff. So I just that was the one that really that I dug and just kind of hung on me for a little bit. So
Travis, was that one of your two or three?
That was one of mine. That was one of mine. Yeah, that was my top three. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, the art on that one was fantastic too.
It's all beautiful. It
really.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
Andrew was going to pick it, so it didn't make my list. Like, I knew, I was like, oh,
Yeah.
I don't have a vagina. Andrea does. She's
Andrea's definitely going to pick this one because it's got girls in pink in it. Right?
No, I just like, I get why it connects, right? I get why, you know, I understand that, right? So I like, yeah. I understand.
Do you think of it with being the symbolism,
very thing, you know?
Do you think with the symbolism of the pearl, like the pearl necklace on there, in the sense of, hey, the better you do, the more pearls you get. Mm-hmm. Do you think that is more of an like indictment of like trophy wife kind of attitude, or do you think? What do you think like the symbolism of the pearls mean?
Because I did kind of feel that way because they kind of like touched on people praising her for how beautiful her necklace is and stuff like mm-hmm. that. And so she did become kind of this elevated status because of it. So I did definitely think like it was part of like the trophy wife kind of thing. And also like it could look like he is rewarding her with these things. So it's like how well he takes care of her and all this stuff. But then also when it starts to get, it's like when it gets shorter, it's like a literal leash on her, like it's choking her. And so I kind of see like a couple of different ways, like a couple of different types of like symbolism that you could take from the look.
Yeah.
The
to me, it was like, you know, signs of affluence, right? Nice, crisp shirt. Starch, clean, no things on there, mm-hmm. clean shoes, crisp hat, and stuff like that. And so for like that segment of society, what we think of as like a trophy wife, it would be like, oh, look how much my husband has bought me, or look at how much he's expending on me. This must mean I'm a good little wife, right, mm-hmm. on there. And I thought the pearl necklace has been used a lot in like mid-century mm-hmm. literature. And I thought this was a really kind of interesting take on when she hung herself with it. I was just like, oh, that's good.
Oh, so that's good. I was like, where is this going to go? I was like, don't like give up, girl. Like, why aren't you leaving this man? And then I'm like, oh, okay, never mind. Like she did, but not the way.
like hanging yourself with a symbol of your, I guess
of the thing that tied you down your whole life, that she was essentially hanging, like she was hanging herself her whole life with this thing. You know what I mean? Because she just kind of like, just let it happen. And then she was like, okay, I'm done. Yeah. So yeah, I thought it was great. I'm glad you picked it too, Trev.
And so Travis, what's one of yours? Give us one of your stories that you picked.
I liked I think it's Brian Azzarello, the Us Versus Us, the Vaxxer one.
That was one of my other ones.
Yeah.
All right.
That was Vlad. I'd never heard of this artist either, Vlad Legostoff. I was Legostoff. Like, wow, I love this art on here. Like, it was really fun art on there. God, I don't even know how to describe it. It's almost like, not Dilbert, but it does feel Sunday funny strip, you know, kind of penciling on there. Yeah, it's basically it's
like Dagwood, right? Like it feels a little.
Yeah,
like,
that's it.
Yeah.
But like Dagwood, if you tried to make him like more realistic, like, but it has that.
Indiana vibe. Dagwood. If Dagwood was like an adventurer.
Yeah.
So what's what about this story got you? What's the thing that you're like, okay, yeah, this is it. Was it the
one? It's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 pages. And like, it does remind me so much of like a Sunday funny where it's so truncated. It was the art that got me and the satire, but also the neutrality of the satire as well. It just seemed to be pointing out less of the like the absurdities of if you're pro-vax or anti-vax, and more just satirizing the conflict that this has built up on there. So it's basically a couple of monsters chasing this couple, a la scene in a horror movie, and they got the chainsaw and like, okay, so we're picking sides in the first couple of panels. This couple's about to be murdered. And then you realize, oh, it's the monsters have been vaxxed. And my favorite line is the monsters are like, let's save their lives. And the woman says, Junior, don't let them jab me. He says, don't worry, babe. I'll do the right thing or die. And then he dies. He immediately dies. And then you think it's going to be like this little parable that's tied up and like, hey, you know what? If there's something good for your health, do it. But then when the woman is like, what happens after we die? One of the monsters says, you go to heaven. And the other monster says, just kidding. And then the other says, we eat you.
That was very crypt, right? Tales from the Crypt. Yeah. We eat you. Right?
There's actually no like light at the end of the tunnel for this. Like, it's all going to be very, very bad for this. Yeah.
But even like with the cartoony nature, the monster designs were still pretty like scary. It was humorous. You're kind of watching where to go. And it was just this really kind of fun, Halloween sweet treat.
Correct.
It wasn't super scary. I didn't, you know, it's not haunting me or like very, like what we read last time with the fables on there. It's just like just literally like picking up a Sunday Funnies and being like, oh, that was a good seven panels.
Yeah,
but like I'd love to see so many of these, like do a creep show, do a Tales from the Crypt with like these, because some of them are just like visually like would be so cool with makeup and like obviously this is like a very Hills Have Eyes, like they're all
I love it. My first pick is a family.
Oh, wait, stop. Okay. I think I talked over it.
Yeah.
Okay. Andrea, do you want to guess what Josh's top pick is?
Well, you're not gonna. I have three. I picked three. I'm not gonna do them. I'm not doing them in order.
All right. Okay.
But I wonder. I do want to know if you can pick my top one.
Is the one you just said your top one?
No, I just that's not my favorite one. But that is.
Okay.
That's the first one I'm talking about because I figured neither of you picked it, so that's why I'm doing this one first.
Behind the scenes, I want to know like what is your rubric for us? Like what you're like? Well, Andrew's gonna pick these ones, and Trav's gonna pick these, and like.
Well, because I know Travis very well, so I know what's gonna get his little goat. I know it's gonna get his little goat in the stories. If there were more boobs in them, that's the one I would have picked.
That's true. Honeypot or whatever it is, like it's like a month.
Not nearly enough boobs in this book. I'm gonna say that.
So,
okay, I feel like you also picked I don't know. Sounds and Haptics. Did you pick that?
No, I did. Well, I almost did.
Okay. I'll guess one more and then I'll leave you alone. A Hand in It?
No.
Okay.
Pick it. No. All right. So
is it Pattern Recognition?
No. I didn't like that one, actually. I didn't like that one. So
Klaus Johnson.
I didn't the story didn't do it for me.
But
here's my first one. Family values. One, okay. Corn. Am I right, guys?
Okay, yes, they had it. Was that album or just a song called Family Values?
I don't know. Wasn't that the tour they did? So,
oh yes, the Family Values tour.
Family
that
Values tour.
Your Eminem was really big.
Yeah, yeah. Anyways, not why I picked it. So Family Values is in the first issue. It is. I got to tell you, Family Values.
Yes.
Writer Stephanie Phillips, artist Phil Hester, inker Travis Himmel, and colorist Marissa Luis. I like this one because I like when we're reading these, right? This whole thing is like, ooh, let's make a point about something. And there are a couple of these I felt the senator one, sorry if you picked that one, the senator one I think was too pointed, made too much of a point. It felt too like, ooh, right? This one I thought was like a good, like, hey man, internet sucks, doesn't it? Like, we're terrible people. And I just read Running Man, so this idea of like watching the downfall or putting people in terrible situations and watching them, I thought was good. This essentially is, there are armed men in this guy's house. He has a gun. His two children and his wife are tied up, and he must decide, one of them must die before the alarm goes off. And who is it going to be? And so the whole story is like him going like, I can't do this. He throws up because he can't do it. He's like, who do I kill? And his son's like, kill me, you can have another son. And his wife is like, don't do it. And the wife is like, you should kill yourself, right? The wife is like, do the right thing, kill yourself. And he's like, are you kidding me? I'm not going to kill myself. He's like, I should kill you, right? And this whole thing. And then he kills his wife, right? But the twist isn't that. The twist is, and you don't know this, the twist is there's a guy online who's like, oh my God, I can't believe this just happened. And then you see him smile and he tells his wife, hey, we won. I'm going to be rich. I can't believe I bet on this. I bet which one he was going to be. And then outside of his home is the tactical team.
Squad, yeah.
Going to make him go through it. It's cheesy. It's dumb. I like this.
No, sort of, no,
I thought this was a good one.
I like the kind of, I like the sort of like, it's one where you want the twist, right? I didn't see the dumb twist coming. Right. Mm-hmm. That's the fun part about these sort of like Tales from the Crypt thing is like, ooh, what is it? What are they pointing out? What's the, you know, what's the thing of it? And I thought this did a really good job of sticking the like, oh, my God, the ticking clock is there. The blam. And you're like, oh, man. And then they go like, aha, here's the twist for it. Right.
Yeah.
I thought this one was good. I enjoyed it. The art was, I kind of like the very boxy, squarey art of it. I like the ticking clock the whole time. I thought that was done really well, like the timer going off on it. I like the idea of like them not knowing each other, right? Like the mom being like, she wants to be a vet. She's like, actually, I want to be a zoologist. Like, you don't even know me, right? And so I just thought this idea of this family struggling through like, how do you make this terrible choice? And then it doesn't matter anyways, because it's all for the enjoyment of people. It's really, if you want to get really meta, we're enjoying it. Are we any better enjoying the fictionalized version of this than the real version, guys? Right. That was my first one. So let's go round robin again. Andrea.
Well, I think that was before you go on there. I'm trying to remember what it is. I was trying to search it, but there's a one act play this reminded me so much of. And it's usually done in competitions at like high school. It's like 20 minutes. It's kind of like a locked room situation where people are all tied to a chair. And anyways, there's like but like, I just like the claustrophobic feeling of a lot of this happening in one place as well. Mm-hmm. And we just get right into it. Like when we enter the scene, the volume's already at like 11, you know?
Yeah.
And then it's the twist actually kind of cools you down for a second. And then you're like, oh, you know, and a lot of these are kind of like that where, because they're so short, we're entering in media res and just kind of like ratcheting it up. That was kind of what was interesting about the pearl necklace one is that it did have some exposition to it.
It felt complete, right? The pearl felt like a complete sort of thing.
It did. And it didn't feel rushed, even though it was short. You know what I mean? Like it, I liked that a lot.
All right. Next one, Andrew. Let's say you have one more to pick. If you had three, you already, like, what's one? What do you think?
Yeah, I got one more, so.
Yeah.
Hey, can Trav go before me?
Fine. Travis, what do you got? I was trying to be nice and have the guest go first. Travis, give it to him.
I had two in case Andrea picked one of mine. I'm liked...
We've been on the same wavelength, so I'm curious what you chose.
I went with Gray Green Memories.
That's one of mine. It's my number one, Travis. That's my number one.
That was your number one? Okay.
Yeah, yeah, it's this is two people I haven't heard before. I don't want to click back to it because then I'm gonna have to.
I got it. It's Madison Gray Green Memories something. Is Tyler Crook is the writer and artist, and the colorist is Michelle Madsen. Tyler Crook is a fantastic artist. There's a lot of creepy stuff. He has a whole series that's like Southern Gothic horror. I can't remember what it's called. It's escaping me right now. I read the beginning of it. He's a great kind of cartoonist, right?
Yeah. Well, these Southern stories are always what Josh and I have referred to as colored in barbecue sauce.
It is very barbecue. Yeah. It's a very like
Southern bastards.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyways, it opens with this older, or well, I don't know her age is. She's dead, so we can't tell. I don't want to discriminate.
It's a mom. We know that.
But yeah, it's a mom. A mom staring at baby health pears, peas, and carrots. And Josh, jump in anytime too, because I know this is one of
a mom zombie, a mom zombie, if you will.
Oh, I didn't say that. Yeah, mom zombie in a grocery store that's obviously like apocalyptic, cobwebs, broken windows, and she's just staring at this baby food. And it's this internal monologue that she's going with. She's like, how long have you been standing here? A day, a month, a year? Feels like you've always been here, but that's not right, is it? You came here for something else. You came here to get something, something important. And then we cut to the baby food and we see kind of like flashbacks to her, like trying to survive the zombie apocalypse, or picture of her husband and her baby on there. And she's just staring at it. And then these civilians, human civilians, walk in. And of course she has that zombie virus rage. So she attacks them and of course gets killed by the quote unquote heroes,
the mom, the tech. Right? She gets killed by another mom, right?
Yeah, exactly. Which just makes her more powerful. Yeah. Yep. And then we get, because she's a zombie, simply shooting her just dissembles her parts. It doesn't destroy her. So the story ends with this now ripped apart mother zombie, the head staring back up at that baby food and just repeating that cycle. How long am I lying here? A day, a month, a year? It feels like I've been here for a long time. And I think this is the tightest storytelling for like that extreme pathos hit, like mainlining pathos on there where you're just like, oh man, this just, you know, I mean, it's not the first person to twist like, oh, zombies might be the heroes or zombies are the victims of something. And then in so many movies and so much pop culture, we just shred them like they're, you know, villainous creatures on here, but they're actually victims. But adding the mom into it and then using the baby food as like a centerpiece to kind of just expedite the pathos on there was just, I thought was great.
Yeah, the reason I picked this one is because I like the idea of the exploration of like, what is a zombie thinking about, right? Like, why are the zombies, like you think of like Dawn of the Dead, right? Or you like, why, like the idea of like, oh, of course they all go to the mall, right? Because right. They're
like, you how know, like how do their memories like maintain? Like, do they like, have memories? Like, what is like, or do they have one focus? Like, how this one repeats over and over?
Yeah. And so I thought that was a really interesting idea of like, okay, so why is what is going through the zombie's mind? Right. It was a really interesting idea. And the idea of like, this was a mom who was just trying to take care of her kid, who then you get the mom trying to take care of her kid as the one who, you know, literally blows her head off her body. And then I just like the idea that it's this never ending loop, right? Like that thought, that nagging thought in the zombie's head is not going to go away. Plus, I love Tyler Crook. I love the art a lot. And Travis, you're right. It's that barbecue, right? It's like it's colored. It's like collard greens or green beans and barbecue sauce and cornbread is the palette of this story. And there's just I'm a sucker for that sort of like minimal coloring that you create a mood, right? Like you create that dead and dying mood with the coloring on it. And then you create another mood with the rage and the anger with the red. It is, I don't know. There's just something, and it's such a tight story. It's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 pages are all that, but it's like a tight 6 pages. I think it did it really well. There's a book out right now that I'm probably going to make you read for the show called Everything Dead and Dying. And it's a zombie book, right? And it's essentially this guy lives in a town and he's the only, like he's not a zombie, but a lot of the town is, and they're just replaying. The zombies are just going through their last day over and over again, right? So like the zombies are just going through the motions. And so it's him and his zombie family that are still alive, but he's not a zombie and they're just going through the motions every day of their last day of life.
This eternal loop that you've talked about seems to kind of be present in some degree in a lot of these stories, right? And just horror in general is the sense we end it.
You can't break free, right?
And then we begin it again. Yeah.
Yeah. Which is my other choice before we get to my Andrea, what's yours?
I'm out.
Yeah, Travis is out. Andrew, what do you
got? Well, that was actually one of mine as well.
Okay.
So so I was kind of like, oh, I should probably figure it out. And it's kind of tough. Like, the twists in some of these were, like, I was digging it, and then the twist I was kind of, like, let down a little bit by it, and just, or they felt, like, incomplete or something. So I'm trying to see, like, I kind of, like, Under the Influence is the last one.
Yeah, it's a very, like, take on influencer culture, right? Like,
yeah, and I mean, that sounds like so lame, but I really love the art in this one. It kind of reminded me of The Substance. I don't know if either of you guys even saw The Substance, but
I don't watch movies.
It is.
I liked how the guy was like the what's his name from Jurassic Park?
Yes, Newman. I thought that was funny. Newman. It's Newman. Yeah, yeah. It's Ned. Nedry, that's the guy who has the plant that she uses. He's literally dressed like,
he's like legit, like straight pull from Jurassic Park. Yeah. But this one is like, she's this like smoking hot, like little yoga influencer. And the opening just cracks me up because it's so real. She's just talking about like, you want to be like the best version of you and all this stuff. And then it's her on a phone, and then it's all like her audience essentially. So then there's like a legit yoga girl, and there's like this dude just kind of like sitting on a couch, like just eating food and watching her. There's a dude on the toilet watching her. There's an exhausted mother surrounded by children watching her. So it's like all these people that are like watching her for different reasons, and like, you know, and then she has some sort of level up type, you know, they can't call it a weight loss drug. So she's like, it's, what do they call it?
A supplement or something like that.
Supplement or whatever. Yeah. Dietary supplement.
Yeah.
And it comes from this like rare plant, and it's supposed to be amazing. And so she's filming all her stuff and all these wild positions. And, so her, this guy who's essentially making this dietary supplement comes in, and he is essentially Nedry with this plant. It's so funny. But he comes in and says, hey, there's like this problem where we've been testing it on rats, and the rats do lose weight. They become like emaciated, but then they start eating each other. They start cannibalizing. And so there's one like rat left, and he's trying to like explain this to her, and she doesn't care. She's like, I've been taking it. I feel amazing. I look amazing. And you see her get more emaciated throughout the story. And then she's about to do some huge kind of like con type situation. And before she goes out, you start to see her like look a little more unhinged. And her little assistant dude, she basically they introduce her, and she goes out, and she's like holding his torso because she's ripped him apart and eaten part of him. And then the Nedry character calls and says, hey, we figured it out. We just have to take this like one little piece out, and nothing bad will happen, and it'll actually work. And then it just shows her at the end where she's eaten her entire audience.
Yeah. Just cannibalized everybody. Just tore up, like tore them asunder.
Everybody there. All her supporters. And it ends with it saying, like, you were right. You'll have everything you ever wanted. Like, if this is successful. And she's like, well, yeah, she's
already ruined it. You know what I mean? Yeah.
So that was a good one, because you felt like there was like kind of like a true villain with the influencer on there. You're like, you didn't even feel bad for the death. You're just like, oh.
Not even a little bit. I'm like, how bad can this get? Let's see. I thought the art was fun. It was good and gory at the end. It was really simple. It's not as like poignant or deep as some of these others that we've like talked about. But in a pinch, I was like, well, I like the art on this one. It's kind of funny.
Well, I will say, to kind of like get things kind of tied around it, is we were talking about last time with our first two about spooky season comic month. And we're like, okay, we're there, but like the itch hasn't fully been scratched. I feel like these short little bits were really good at scratching a lot of itches. Because if one story didn't do it, then there was something. It was really fun reading these little scary stories to tell in the dark, which is another scary movie I watched for the first time this Halloween season. Yeah. And it was, and between that, I watched a lot of horror anthology stuff on there. I was like, horror anthology really is like the way to go for this season, where it's just like, you get these little bite-sized stories, and some of them haunt you, and some of them forget, and some of them are like a real slog through. But if you read five and even one of them kind of haunts you, it's kind of worth it.
Right. It's worth it. Right. I think that's the best piece about this. And I'm like a short story fan anyways. Like I started off saying like, it's only 100 pages, that book I read. So it didn't have to be great. It just had to be good. Right. And I was like, it's worth it. Right. I think that this is one of those things. I feel like as I read it, every issue had, there's three stories in every issue. It felt like every issue had one story that I was like, okay, yeah, that was worth this read. Right. That was good. If I got two out of the three, I was like, oh man, that's, but I feel if like you can give me one good one out of those three stories, I'm fine. And it was worth the read. Right. And and to me, I like to be able to like get a story done. I don't like not having it hang out there. Right. To be like, oh, I got to pick up next issue or the next month or the next volume in order to finish it. It was very cool just to have these stories be in and out, done. Get your little dopamine hit of spookiness and then be out of it. So,
and it's so great to, because it lends itself to all these different styles of horror because you know what I mean? Like if it's more gory or if it's zombies, there's a vampire story in here, that sort of thing. It's like psychological. Like I love that. And that's why I like Creepshow. Like the film is so great because they have all these different directors coming in with all these different styles.
Side note, remember how we were talking about that vampire story from Mike Mignola's Fables kind of?
Yeah.
I feel like this would be the modern version of her, the vampire story in this.
Yeah,
this is flash forward. She's on a boat. She's like, I haven't tried the boat thing yet.
It was
the old vampire boat gag.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There were a lot of little good stories. There were a lot of stories on here we didn't talk about that I thought were really good. And I would tell you you're hearing this. There's like a week of October left. If you just need that little dopamine hit and you haven't had it yet, you just need that spooky thing. Pick this up. Right. Like I like worth it. What did I spend? $14 on Kindle or something like that to read it.
I would say if you're not in a high trick or treat traffic area where it's like you get a group of kids and then it's like another 10 minutes and then you get another group of kids, perfect porch reading for trick or treating.
I like that, Travis. That's a good call. That might be my Halloween evening. I might pick up volume two to read on Halloween. We'll see what happens. I think Renner's going to a friend's. And then it's like,
I don't know. Your area Mesa's building up, man. You might get more kids.
It's a Friday, so it might be. It's been slow the last couple of years. So
last few years have been slow. It's just bumming me out because I got a brand new fog machine. So
yeah. So we'll see. Oh, that's right. You had to pick up your new fog machine.
I had actually bought it.
Oh, what a great short story about a woman who picks up a fog machine. But there's something wrong with the fog machine. She ends up killing all the kids.
Oh, perfect. We just wrote it.
Fantastic. So good.
Yeah.
Oh.
She gets the cheap smoke. She gets the cheap fog stuff.
She tries to make it herself because her husband won't let her spend any more money on Halloween decorations. No. So she has to make the fog juice herself.
Yeah. The fog juice.
Let's do the cheap fog juice, guys. It'll be fine. Craig's fog.
The government's shut down. We're not getting paid, people. We got to make our own fog juice.
That's right. All right, everybody. This was a long episode, my friends. We went into it. Okay, no, that's okay. It's good. We haven't done an episode probably over 40 minutes in quite a while. So
not since Batman's Long Halloween has there been such a long Halloween episode.
All right. So folks, thanks for tuning in. I remember you can find the podcast at comicexposure.com or wherever you find your podcasts. Like us, rate us, review us, leave a comment on the Spotify. We will read those, talk about them. We appreciate the interaction. It lets us know that we're just not yelling into the ether as we do this podcast. But we would do it anyways because it's an excuse to hang out and talk about stuff. So thank you for tuning in. Tell your grandma. Andrea, thanks for sending another spooky season with us. And I believe you're
things I look forward to the most. So
I believe you're joining us where you're joining us for a book next month in November as Travis and I dive into Noir November. We are reading, folks, get ready. We're reading Gun Honey. By people who aren't on the cover, because why would we put their names on the cover of a book? We're reading Mugshots by Thomas Matthews and Gattani. I don't know. That one looks really darn good. And then we are reading some criminal Travis Ratz and I went back in time and we read volume one of Criminal, and we're reading the newest volume of Criminal. I'm excited for Noir November.
Nice.
It is Travis and I's knives. Yeah. It's Travis and I's favorite type of comic book. It feels over the 10 years has been crime books seem to be our bread and butter that we cannot stop coming back to. So
if we had to give a 10-year award, it would be Sean Phillips and Ed Brubaker.
Yeah, Sean Phillips and Brubaker would win if we gave out comic exposure awards, they
would be exposies.
If we did the exposies, they'd be exposed. So we'd expose ourselves to that.
Imagine the statue for that.
And it's a comic book. It's the comics code symbol covering the business. It's Travis flashing them in a trench coat with the comics authority code blocking out.
We actually had a very provocative comic exposure
where we had capes at one point, and we looked we're draped in capes.
These are the days before AI, people, where you had to hire out.
They were supposed to be capes. Yeah. It was,
but you were definitely in togas, and I have that shirt, and it is very suggestive.
Was supposed to be like Terry Hatcher in that Superman promo, because that was an important time in my life as a young man. So, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for tuning in. We appreciate it.
I gotta take that picture off my dating profile. Or add it. I don't know which one.
I think you should add it.
I think even drawing wise, I've outaged that animation.
maybe. You can go in and touch it up, add a couple lines.
Yeah, exactly.
We're okay. All right, folks, thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you next trade.